Yes, I'll start with a disclaimer, although it still means nothing to me. The views expressed on the Geeks...
Wait, hang on. You never told us.
All right. Let me get through the disclaimer, and then I'll explain what's going on. The views expressed on Geeks and Beats are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of their employers.
Correct.
Now, you have an employer. I do not. I continue to be a freelancer, a contract person. So I did get an opportunity to sign on as a consultant with a brand new radio station that's starting in Toronto called Indie 88. It'll be on the air sometime this summer. I'm officially their guidance counselor.
That's hilarious.
Which is a better word than consultant. So I'll be sort of the guy behind the curtain offering advice and guidance on the various aspects of radio in Toronto. These people are new in the market, so it's kind of important for them to have a contact like me. But as far as me being employed, well, I'm employed by me.
You still haven't called yourself under the carpet about the thing you said last week.
Yeah.
From the headquarters of Geeks and Beats magazine, simulcast on shortwave radio and Citizens Band 14, this is the world's most popular podcast with Alan Cross and Michael Hainsworth, featuring musical guest Sting.
Casting Star Wars by scouring BBC's Top of the Pops. We'll tell you who's the next big alien.
Flying Air Maiden, would you trust rock legend Bruce Dickinson as your pilot?
And I gotta tell you, fellas, you have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
The creator of one of the coolest iPhone apps dropped by the Geeks and Beaks studios to talk about pressing virtual vinyl.
And we'll find out how much it costs to cut an album in a real-world recording studio.
Plus, the Geeks and Beats outrageous iTunes review contest comes to a close.
And Lou Reed gets a new liver. Or as Alan tells it, the liver got stuck with Lou Reed.
Poor liver.
And now, Alan Cross and Michael Hainsworth.
This is not the actress you're looking for.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars. Don't let them end.
Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine?
I've met her a couple of times. I've hugged her once. She's very tall, very red-haired, very... She's like she stepped out of a medieval painting, and she smells and feels very good when you hug her.
She's also the pop diva, Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine, age 26, and apparently going to get a role in the new Star Wars trilogy?
Well, I can see that, actually. She's very dramatic even in real life, and I can see her being part of Star Wars in an instant. If you've ever met her and hung out with her for any length of time, you would understand that, yes, she is a bit of an alien, and she probably would fit.
To me, the band is alien. Should I know Florence and the Machine? Do other people know Florence and the Machine? Am I the one who's just out of the loop?
Oh, yeah. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run by your children, run by your sisters, never run out. Leave by your loving alone behind. You may carry it with you if you want to survive. The good days are over. Yeah, you're out of the loop on this one. She's actually quite a star in the UK and on the alternative scene in North America. She had a long build over the last 3-4 years, and she's now through 2 albums, and she's actually one of the 12 or 10 wealthiest under 30s in the UK right now because of her success. And she's a lot of fun.
Are you actually a Star Wars fan?
No, I'm a Star Trek guy.
Oh, really? Like all together?
And
wait a minute. Was that a Star Trek hailing frequency sound there?
Yeah. Do you want to hear that? Okay, listen to this.
The L-Cars sound effects and the Star Trek communicator.
Well, that's on my iPhone, yeah.
You are not a Star Wars guy at all, then.
No, I'm not. Not at all. I really don't care. I thought Luke Skywalker was a weenie. I never found Carrie Fisher to be in any way, shape, or form attractive. And I thought Han Solo was a dick.
Here's the interesting thing, though, about Star Wars fans. You're absolutely right about the whiny Luke Skywalker character. Every boy wanted to be Luke Skywalker until he got older. And as he grew up, he sort of grew into the Han Solo character. I think if you ask an adult fan of Star Wars, they would rather be Han Solo than Luke Skywalker. But if you ask a 7-year-old in 1978, he would say definitely Luke Skywalker.
See, that was the problem. Maybe I was a bit too old for Star Wars when it came out. I'd already been indoctrinated with Star Trek.
So are you at least pleas that J.J. Abrams is going to be the director of this?
Please take it away from George Lucas. The problem is that George Lucas directs and then redirects and then redirects and then redirects. If you talk to any Star Wars geek, they'll tell you, George, just leave it alone. Quit fiddling with the movies. The first two movies, which would be chapters 4 and 5, were good. I hated 6 because, you know, who likes Ewoks? And then 1, 2, and 3 were just disasters. As soon as Jar Jar Binks was introduced into the mix, a deliberate attempt to get merchandising, it was crazy.
You want to turn off that phone?
Okay, I'm turning it off now. The problem is that, you know, we talked last week about my weird flight from Singapore.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting notes from people all over the world now saying, hey, they picked it up on Gawker.
All right, well, hang on. Save yourself for that, because it's time for the Geeks and Beats update.
London, Bangkok, New York, Cincinnati. From the worldwide headquarters of Geeks and Beats magazine, this is a G&B news update.
Before we get into the fact that the conversation we opened last week's episode with has now gone viral, we have to get some serious episode business out of the way.
This is our contest, our iTunes contest, right?
The most outrageous iTunes review contest. We had 5 finalists that we put up on geeksandbeats.com, and we asked you to vote for the big winner. It had been neck and neck between Manny Tolan and Haunted Snowfort. And the others really didn't get a lot of attention. We only had 7% suggesting that Andy from God Rock deserved to win because he believed that the podcast was so good that it could bring his dead dog back to life.
Yeah, I ran that one past my wife and I got the big ew response, so I can understand that.
Also, Nut90 tried flattery, which, as we know from past episodes, gets someone anywhere with you.
Yes.
But not with the viewers. Only 7% suggested that he would rather have you narrate his life than Morgan Freeman.
At least I wouldn't fall asleep during the interview.
Yes. Exeter LB3K had figured that the podcast was more entertaining than Christmas Day for him. But it looks like Manny Tolan's Triple Bean Burrito is the one that won. Here's how it reads. I found the Geeks and Beats show one day while in the bathroom. Why in the bathroom? It's the only time I have peace to find new and interesting podcasts to listen to. Sidebar, do you find that yourself?
Me? No. I'm in, I'm out. I've got other places to do that.
You don't use like an iPad as a digital replacement for a magazine?
No! In, out. Listen, if you have enough fiber in your body, you won't be doing that sort of stuff.
Well, to that point, he writes, when I found the Geeks and Beats podcast, I discovered 2 things. Alan Cross and Michael Hainsworth are fantastic broadcasters and entertaining. And 2, Triple Bean Burritos and Molson Canadian Wheat Beer are never a good idea.
I would agree with that. That's probably a very good idea.
And it may also explain why he had time to go discover the podcast while sitting on the throne.
Yes.
So congratulations, Matty Tolan. You won yourself the big contest, the most outrageous iTunes review on the show so far. And as a matter of fact, even though the contest is over, we do want you to go and review it as well because it helps keep the ratings up.
Actually, I have to point out an observation here. Your wife works with my wife.
Yes.
And she brought a Geeks and Beats mug to work. And my wife says, well, why don't we have one?
Ah, yes. I went out and I bought one for the wife, a travel mug, as a matter of fact, because she's got a whole bunch of 680 News mugs that are so old, the travel mugs have lost most of their 680 logos.
Wait a second. We have a travel mug?
We do. Have you not been to your own website?
Well, where is it? On the store? Where is it?
Show me. Yeah, go to the swag store, www, or as they used to say in the 90s when the media first got in on this, www.
There it is. The Geeks and Beaks Miracle Travel Mug of Traveling. Ooh.
Yes. Spent all night working on the copy for that.
Ooh, I'm going to have to get one of these things.
I couldn't figure out whether I was going to get you a regular mug or a travel mug, and I just decided to get you neither.
No, I like the sippy cups in the morning. I have one that I bought last August at the DMZ in between North and South Korea. There's actually a gift shop in what's called the Joint Security Area.
There's a gift shop at the Demilitarized Zone?
There are 2. So I bought a whole bunch. I bought some barbed wire. I bought a sippy cup travel mug that said DMZ on it.
How do you get barbed wire through security at the airport?
Oh, it's encased in acrylic. It's official DMZ barbed wire that's been recycled from the border.
They saw you coming.
Oh, they did. Hey, wait a second. Did our mug go up to $50?
Yeah, the mug was always $50.
I thought it was 25.
No, no, no. 25 is all it takes to get yourself a co-producer credit.
Oh.
You've got to get our ripoffs correct.
We do have a co-producer for this show. His name is Ian Conway. Thank you very much for donating $25 to the cause. You are now officially a co-producer of this episode of the Geeks and Beats podcast. If you would like to be a co-producer, we would really appreciate it because this does cost us some money and we would like to defray costs as much as we possibly can. Go to the website geeksandbeats.com and you can see how you too can be a co-producer of this fine broadcast.
So a funny thing happened to you on the way back from a music conference. We talked about this last week.
Yes.
And now it seems that photo that you Instagrammed of the chaos that followed your flight dropping 100 feet midair has made it around the world.
It has. This was Singapore Airlines Flight 308 departing Singapore Changi Airport at 9.05 a.m. on Sunday, the 26th of May. Some 2 hours out of Singapore, we had what's called clear air turbulence, which basically sent everybody's breakfast to the ceiling, including 11 passengers and one crew member. There were some injuries, nothing serious. We didn't have to divert. We just continued on to London. But I took some pictures and Instagrammed everything, and I have been getting this whole thing. It's just been crazy about how people have picked up these pictures. So I'm just going to read you this, and people found this on Instagram. Singapore Straits Times, the Singapore News Alternative, Asia One, ABC News New York and Good Morning America, BT in Denmark, VG in Norway, the biggest daily newspaper in Sweden, which is called Aftonbladet, SVT, which is Swedish television, the Herald Sun in Melbourne, news.au.com in Australia, Nine News in Australia, the Aviation Herald, Pack and Hack, Boarding Area, and I just had a couple of emails tonight. One is from the Daily Mail in the UK, and if you go to Gawker, they've picked up the thing too. So it's wild. This is, again, a study in how things spread. It's a study in virus transmission. 13 pictures I took, and I put them up on Instagram, and suddenly they became this weird sensation. Didn't expect it. I just did it for family and friends. But now, you know, millions of people have seen these pictures completely by I guess, accident.
When they put a photo on Gawker, you can annotate the photo. Have you noticed this?
No, I'm just going to it right now.
Someone's put an annotation next to one of the flight attendants who's sort of looking down. And you can see by the looks on their faces that they're still quite concerned about what's going on and that maybe this turbulence isn't over. One annotation right next to the flight attendant reads, quote, "At least I died doing what I loved, handing out small packages of peanuts."
That, you know, okay.
But I think the internet itself is more surprised, not with the serene and resolved looks on the stewardesses.
Yeah, baby.
Do we even call them stewardesses anymore?
Flight attendants, please.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
Thank you. Flight attendants. Is that the entire internet went nuts over the fact that there's some guy reaching down into the middle of the aisle, what looks like clearly to pick up some food.
Yeah, I know. I saw Fark also picked it up, and the comments on Fark are hysterical. One of the comments pointed out that this guy is just following the 5 second rule.
Yes, exactly. Everyone seemed to be quite tickled by the fact that you found a piece of sausage down the back of your shirt.
Yeah, somebody else's half-eaten sausage. And if you go to the Fark site and look at it, there's a bunch of Mr. Sulu comments.
Oh, my.
You can see where those are going. It's fantastic. So, yeah, thank you for everybody. It has meant absolutely no financial gain for me whatsoever. And I'm looking here on Fark. And, oh, they did link to me. They did link to my Instagram page, which is nice.
Yes. And they linked to your website as well. I wonder if the pilot, though, of your flight was Iron Maiden singer Bruce Dickinson.
What? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Now, is this Iron Maiden singer Bruce Dickinson the same Bruce Dickinson who puts his pants on one leg at a time?
Yes.
Except once my pants are on, I make gold records.
About 20 years ago, he decided that he was going to take one of those $35 learn how to fly flights when he went past an airfield in Florida. He found that he really liked it and eventually got deeper and deeper into it until he became a fully qualified 757 pilot. And he was flying for an airline called Astraeus that did what we call wet leasing, which sounds weird. But basically what a wet lease means is an aircraft charter or aircraft company will lend out an aircraft and a full crew to another airline or a travel company of some sort. And Astraeus, for example, was very big in ferrying passengers to Mecca for the Hajj pilgrimage. But a couple of years ago, Astraeus went out of business, like a lot of airlines have gone out of business. And Bruce was thinking, well, you know what? He had an interest in this aviation company in Wales. And he thought, well, listen, we got a little bit of money. Maybe we can turn this into an airline. So right now they're exploring the possibilities of doing this. And it's very possible that Bruce Dickinson, who is, you know, he's worth about $100 million, will be able to get this thing off the ground, which would be kind of cool. When Iron Maiden flew around the world on a tour a couple of years ago, maybe you saw the DVD, they wet leased a 757, a couple of 757s, I think. No, one from Astraeus. They painted it up in the Iron Maiden logo. It was Air Eddie or something. And Bruce was the pilot, and he flew the band and crew and equipment around the world.
I figure if he starts up a new airline, he should call it Air Cowbell.
Now, there's no cowbell in Iron Maiden.
Fellas, it was sounding great, but I could have used a little more cowbell.
You can get the SNL reference?
I did get the SNL reference, but there was no cowbell in Iron Maiden.
Any cowbell at all?
He's worth $100 million. He's gotten along fine without it.
But is he wearing gold diapers?
No, he's a pretty cool guy. I've met Bruce. I like him.
I have a feeling you and I are having two very different conversations.
I think we are having. You never were an Iron Maiden fan.
I was never an Iron Maiden fan. My only experience with Bruce Dickinson is from Saturday Night Live.
You couldn't name an Iron Maiden song, could you?
No. I wouldn't know an Iron Maiden song. I know what an Iron Maiden is.
No.
Not a lot of people know what an Iron Maiden actually is.
Well,
it looks like a coffin, stands upright. It's got spikes at the back, spikes at the front. You put the victim in it and close the door.
It's a medieval torture device, yes.
Very much so, as is the music, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, God. Here we go. All right. You have just incurred the wrath of metal fans around the world, and I'm not going to be there to protect you.
Cut the cord and go to geeksandbeats.com anytime. You'll get the latest episode and links to the stories the boys are talking about. Geeksandbeats.com. Also available on 8-track and cassette.
Ask Alan anything.
Hi, it's Jason from St. Thomas, Ontario, and I got a question for Geeks and Beats. Stiletto Fetish, probably 1989, 1990 Toronto band. Great hit with a cover of I Think I Love You. Whatever became of them and how'd they form? Thanks. Bye.
I remember Stiletto Fetish. They won the Ontario Modern Rock Search, and they had a song called, I think it was called Studio B, which was sort of a early 90s two-woman rap thing with a real sexual sort of bent to it. And then they followed that up with a version of the Partridge Family's I Think I Love You. I don't know what happened to them. I do know that one of them was the ex-wife of an announcer we had at CFNY back in the day named All Night Andre. And I asked him about Stiletto Fetish, and he really didn't have anything that he wanted to say about them.
Maybe that said more about his ex-wife than anything else.
Yeah. I've had this question before, and I've never been able to find out the answer. I don't know.
We've stumped you?
Well, I don't know what became of them. Other than the fact that they had those two songs and then completely disappeared. They disappeared off the radar of the radio station and everybody associated with the radio station. So if I can find Andre, maybe he knows. But other than that, nope, sorry.
Let's get Andre to call in. In the meantime, I'm on YouTube. Stiletto Fetish, Black Tears. Is this Kim LaPalme?
Oh.
Leanne Alliston?
No, it might be them, but I don't even remember this song.
Well, congratulations. You stumped Alan Cross.
Well, yeah, you did.
All right, we'll let you do some legwork on this, and maybe we'll do it as an update next week.
Yeah, do it next week, because now you've got me curious. I do have the album sitting here in the basement someplace. But, man, oh, my goodness. When you start putting in Stiletto and Fetish into YouTube.
Yeah, you got to be very careful.
Oh, no.
Why we still need recording studios?
This is a very good question. People think that if you can have a laptop with GarageBand on it, why would you bother? And that's not the point. I mean, if you spend some time in a recording studio, any recording studio, you can see that there are certain things that you can do there with the proper isolation, with the proper acoustics, with the proper microphones, with the proper outboard accessories, with the proper console, with the proper producer. You can make a very good recording, better than you can probably make at home.
Well, you just brought up a very interesting point. If you're sitting at home in front of GarageBand or Pro Tools or what have you, chances are it's just you. I think the wetware component's more interesting than the actual hardware you would put into a recording studio. You need that human feedback to what you're working on. You need to be sitting in a studio with your instrument and you know, feeling the room. What's the line from the Saturday Night Live sketch?
Really explore the studio space this time.
You got it, Bruce.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
Explore the space.
Okay.
I like what I'm hearing. Roll it.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, when I was in Singapore back in April, I spent a week in the studio with Steve Lillywhite, who produced a whole bunch of U2 records and Psychedelic Furs and Simple Minds and Billy Idol. Not Billy Idol? Yeah, Susie and the Banshees and a whole bunch of others. And what he did was he took a local band called the Sam Willows. They were the winners of a contest. And the winner got to work with Steve in the studio for a week. And he took this shy, retiring young band from Singapore and turn them into something spectacular. And watching him work the band was absolutely, absolutely amazing. I'm waiting to get they were shooting a video for the song, and I'm waiting to get that video back. And what I'll do on my site is I'll do it on the Geeks and Beats site too, is I'll post the before and the after versions of this song. The before is before Steve Lillywhite got a hold of them in a recording studio, something that they did mostly at home. And then after, which is what they got out of a proper recording studio with a proper producer.
So you need a sound engineer and a producer who can look at that diamond in the rough and actually turn it into a polished gem.
If you can afford it, absolutely. Now, some people can't.
How much does it cost?
Well, it depends on the studio. It depends on the producer. Studios can go for, you know, $100 an hour on up, and a studio and a producer can be, you know, sometimes they take a piece of the action, other times it's a flat fee. And it all depends on the pedigree and the track record and the resume of the producer.
How much would you two spend in a recording studio on a per hour basis?
I don't think they even count. You know, $1,500 an hour,
right,
wouldn't be unusual. And then they can bring in whatever producer they want. And at that level, your producer is probably getting points on the back end. So they'll get a fee up front, a fairly small one or modest one compared to what the points will result in on the back end.
Now, if you are sitting in your home studio with GarageBand or what have you, the least you can do is make a good album cover.
Yes. So this is why we have Vinylize. I think this is a really cool app for people in the age where everybody is doing things on their phones and don't have the artwork and the liner notes that we used to have.
The neat thing about Vinylize Me is that it's a real throwback to, I'm going to say, probably starting around the 50s with the, you know, monophonic sound written across the top of the album cover. You've got the indentations of the vinyl that's hidden behind the cardboard, and you get to edit all of this imagery to create your own record album. Joining us now for a closer look at this is the man behind it, David Brzozowski. David, good to have you with us.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Where did you get the idea to do Vinylize Me in the first place?
As you guys know, my company is called Blue Spark Studios. And a little known fact is Blue Spark actually kind of came out of the jazz albums of the Blue Note period, most specifically like John Coltrane and Blue Train and Kind of Blue, Miles Davis. So that's kind of where I got the name for my business. So it kind of logically followed that we, you know, were really interested in those old jazz albums from Blue Note. So just thought one day, wow, it'd be really kind of cool if we could actually put our own pictures in those things and make them look like their old records. You know, a lot of people, the young kids probably don't remember that, but I have a whole case full of records that look just like that.
Oh, I have them too in the basement. And one of the things that I mourn is the death of album artwork and the death of liner notes and all the things that we used to get with a physical product.
Yes, you know, I agree with that. Though there's been a trend, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but I was down in Urban Outfitters yesterday actually looking for a turntable, believe it or not. I gave up my turntable a long time ago, and I have all this vinyl that I want to listen to. So
wait a second. You went to Urban Outfitters to buy a turntable?
Yeah.
I was wondering when you were going to cut him off on that.
Well, actually, don't laugh, because if you go down there, they have a whole ton of turntables lined up, ready to go. And actually, you can listen to vinyl right there in the store. They kind of redid the front section so that they have a whole record selection now.
Oh, wow. I'm on the website here. UrbanOutfitters.com has, for $98, a Crossley Cruiser briefcase portable turntable. For $170, in either gray or shocking orange, you can get a three-speed turntable for $170.
What, like they play 78?
Yes.
Yep, they're all three-speed, and they all have USB connectivity now, so you can run them through your computer and digitize your vinyl, which is great. I didn't actually end up buying one at Urban Outfitters, just to be clear. I went back and ordered one more traditional turntable online last night, actually.
Tell me it was the Techniques.
No. It was just
they don't make the Techniques turntables anymore.
No?
Not the good ones. Not the SL1200s. No, they stopped making those sometime last year.
One of my favorite parts about the Vinylize Me is that you can press the album cover to make it look like it's been stacked, wedged between 300 other album covers over the course of the last 40 years.
Yep, that's actually one of the kind of cool things. There's a lot of photo apps out there. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there are. And that's kind of one of the things that I think sets Vinylize Me apart, is the ability to do that. There's not a lot of filters out there that actually I'm not aware of any that do that. I think that's kind of one of the things that makes it a pretty unique app. And I think that's one of the reasons that our users are really having a good time with it.
Yeah, you can play around with one of these things for a while. I got lost in it, you know, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, we see comments like that there's, you know, I'm going to attribute a lot of time wasted to Vinylize Me, that sort of thing. So yeah, people are getting into it, and the common thing that they say about it is it's really fun. Everybody's having fun with it, which is great to hear, and that's what we put it together for.
What are you doing next with it? I asked because I showed this app to a friend, and he said, "Oh, this is really cool." But I have to say, I find trying to manipulate the image so that it's in just the right spot, or zoom in, or pinch out, it can be frustrating at times. And so his point was that the app is good enough that he's going to keep it on his iPhone in the hopes that you enhance it, improve it, take it to the next level, so that he gets a little notification that it needs to be updated, and he'll use it even more.
We have a list, a big, long list of improvements that we ourselves want to make. And, you know, in addition to the feedback that we've gotten since we put it out, we're going to start digging in for a version 2.0, which is going to address any of the those little frustrations that people may be having, plus probably take it to the next level with things like different you know, shapes for photos, because right now we're all square. The ability to move text around, perhaps even change fonts. We've had a lot of suggestions or requests that the label logo, which is your record label that you can customize, either be completely customizable, so you're not everything doesn't end with tone, or the ability to just get rid of it altogether. So we have those things, you know, on our radar that we're ready to address.
And I guess you have to be careful about things like copyright. You don't want to be able to give people tools that would allow them to create an exact duplicate of an existing record label.
For the most part, copyright doesn't matter too much if you're just using it for kicks. If you're trying to make a profit off of something that's copyrighted, then that's whenever people get upset. But if you're just doing a little cover with your friends or for an anniversary or a party that you're having, I don't see Sony or Blue Note or any of those companies getting upset about that.
Yeah, that probably falls into the jurisdiction of fair use.
David, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was great.
I was talking to Chuck in his Genghis Khan suit and his wizard's hat. He spoke of his movie and how he was making new soundtrack.
I guess the final story this week is Lou Reed's new liver. Lou Reed is 71, and he had apparently been dying of some sort of liver disease. We don't know what kind, but he went to Cleveland. They opened him up, and they gave him a new liver. And the reason he went to Cleveland is because he didn't want any attention drawn to him in New York, which I think is rather interesting. But
Cleveland is definitely an interesting choice.
Well, it is, but I mean, you know, it's American medicine. You go where the I have no idea which hospital he went to, but I bet you it was a big university hospital or something.
Were they all tied up in Cincinnati?
I don't know, but listen, where did Steve Jobs go for his liver? He went to Memphis, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
He went to someplace in Tennessee. I'm pretty sure it was Memphis. It was a university hospital in Memphis. So he wanted to get out of Los Angeles or San Francisco to, you know, where he could get this thing done in secrecy. And I guess that's what happened with Lou Reed, too.
So he's doing well now? He's on the mend at age 71?
He says he's stronger than and fitter than ever.
Doesn't it blow you away that Lou Reed is 71?
No. I mean, this is a guy that's actually, he made his first record in 1957.
I didn't know his wife was Laurie Anderson.
Yeah, they've been together for about 20 years now. Lou kind of went back and forth between teams and eventually settled down with Laurie. They've been together for a long time.
My favorite response, though, to the fact that Lou Reed got himself a new liver was from The Onion, America's finest news source. Headline, New Liver Complains of Difficulty Working with Lou Reed.
He is probably the most cantankerous, the most grumpy man in all of rock. So I wouldn't be surprised if Lou rejects the liver.
Catch all new episodes of Geeks and Beats Wednesdays on iTunes and watch for Geeks and Beats magazine on a newsstand near you. To be part of next week's show, call area code 323-319-NERD. Follow the stories on Twitter or Facebook and get your dose of Geeks and Beats anytime at geeksandbeats.com. The Geeks and Beats podcast would like to thank the National Science Foundation.